the gold rolled through his veins like a thousand railroad trains. And eased his mind in the hours that he chose, while the kids ran around wearing other people's clothes. There's a hole in daddy's arm where all the money goes. Jesus Christ died for nothing, I suppose. Little pitchers have big ears, don't stop to count the years. Sweet songs never last too long on broken radios. Sam Stone was alone when he popped his last balloon, climbing walls while sitting in a chair. Well, he played his last request while the room smelled just like death. With an overdose.
Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
And this is KBOO Portland. It's 10:01 a.m. on a cloudy Friday afternoon, or morning, as it were. And it's time for Valley Views with Dale Holliday.
I'm Dale Holliday, coming to you from Corvallis, Oregon, in the bountiful Willamette Valley. Welcome to my show, Valley Views, a forum for sharing relevant topics relating to people and issues in the Willamette region.
Hi, I'm here today with Jonathan Carroll, a Corvallis environmentalist who likes to walk the walk, and he's going to tell you all about it today. Hi, Jonathan. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Dale. It's nice to chat with you today.
Good, good. Now, tell us, how did you become an environmentalist?
Well, I'm a child of the 70s, and you know, the 70s is when the environmental movement really gained teeth, mm-hmm. if you will. The EPA was created, the Clean Water Act, the first Earth Day.
Yeah.
And you know, we didn't have personal computers to speak of back then, or smartphones, or even internet, so the main media was television, newspapers, magazines, and radio. And so the government would play these PSAs, or public service announcements. Mm-hmm. And there was one that really spoke to me. And it's of this Native American in traditional Native American garb. And he's paddling a canoe. And he looks over to the side and he sees this oil slick with a dead bird. Paddles a little bit, looks over to the other side. He sees garbage floating in the water. Mm-hmm. Then he looks up and he sees smokestacks from a factory spewing this garbage into the air.
Yeah.
And the last frame, you know, focuses on his face and you see a tear going down his cheek. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that really spoke to me. I never forgot it.
That grabbed a lot of people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I started as a kid, you know, and I would just take garbage bags and walk up and down our road with my dog and pick up garbage, you know, mm-hmm. that's what I had power to do. You know?
Mm-hmm. Right, as a kid, yeah.
And so, of course, when I became an adult, I stuck to those values, and it just translates to where I live and how I live my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. That was such a groundbreaking time in, you know, as my background is environmental planning, and there were so many good policies put in place at that time, and actually during a fairly conservative administration, wasn't that Nixon's time?
It was under public pressure, as I understand it.
Yeah, oh yeah,
you're right. He was a real right winger.
Yeah. 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 So yeah, and the don't be a litter bug,
that was
a big one.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, get the kids out there to kind of shame their parents into doing the right thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was you. That was Jonathan as a child. So what happened as you grew? What does it look like in your life now, being an environmentalist?
Right. Well, you know, I moved to Oregon, and so I had decisions to make. You know, I was ready to buy a house at a certain point, and so I decided to buy a house in close proximity to where I worked and to the things that I need, so I'm not dependent on a vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I grew up on a farm where it was primarily an equestrian farm, but we grew food. So I gained an early appreciation of growing your own food,
mm-hmm.
nutritional value, the economics, and it just plain tastes better, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Not to mention that food tends to travel so far from the farm to our plate. If you can grow your own food, you bring that down to zero.
Absolutely.
You know? So that's a huge environmental
impact. Less fossil fuels, yes.
So one of the first things I did when I bought this house was I put a garden in.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been growing food ever since.
Nice. And that's here in Corvallis?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. I like what you say about the moving or living close to where you work. I've been very conscious about that myself. I know a lot of people do have to commute for whatever reason, but I made a choice early on that I would not live more than, maybe 10, 12-minute commute to
right.
where I work.
Right.
And that would be by car, because I do have a car, and you know sometimes I drive it to work. And also there has to be public transportation in case
right.
I can't drive or don't choose to drive. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. But it's hard to do in this country.
Well, yeah, I wish that public transportation had a more of a presence. I mean, I would love a fast rail up the I-5 corridor.
Yes.
Know? Like yesterday I went to visit my friend. There's nothing really I can do to take up there except
mm-hmm.
a car.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
But the good news is I drive an electric vehicle.
Yes, yes.
So that's how I mm-hmm. compensate and make myself feel better.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you're an overall, you know, all-around guy, you know. So tell us about your home again. We
okay.
we start talking about that. And,
sure.
Yeah.
So after I put the garden in, I started okay. focusing on the home and energy. So it was built in the 20s, had no insulation to speak of. So
mm-hmm.
I had foam injected into the walls.
Mm-hmm.
I installed that fiberglass insulation in the attic and under the floor.
Mm-hmm.
I put storm windows on, storm door, and I replaced the back door with an insulated exterior door
mm-hmm.
so the house was tighter.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
That was the first step.
Okay.
And then, you know, after that came things like solar electric system that I installed in
mm-hmm.
2003.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually the second certified grid-tied solar system in the county.
Really? In Benton County?
So.
Uh-huh.
And then a couple of years after that, I put solar hot water on. Now, in retrospect, I wish I did that first because the payback is way quicker.
Okay.
Solar hot water.
Okay.
So.
So, yes. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The house has a composting toilet.
Mm-hmm.
I do rain catchment for drinking and cooking water.
Mm-hmm.
And I drive an EV, so that's the things that I do.
Electric vehicle.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So this is a lot of stuff you did. It sounds like you did it over a period of time, but you know, if you could break it down just a little bit for those of us who might not be, I don't know, just really well versed in this stuff. I understand. Okay, the insulation. I think most people have an idea of what that's all about. Make the house tighter, make it warmer. But when you started with the panels, now the solar panels were the next. Was there a company or someone that installed them, or was this do it yourself? How did you even go about it?
I did this all myself.
Mm-hmm.
I came to this realization that Pacific Power, which was our provider, roughly 80% of the energy came from coal burning.
Oh, yes. A lot of people don't know that, the electricity.
And
yes.
I find coal to be devastating in all aspects.
Yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
so I want as little of it in my demand as possible.
Yes,
so my
yes.
strategy was to get my use down as low as possible first.
Uh-huh.
Things like LED lighting. Mm-hmm. I was an early adopter. I mean, those bulbs
sounds like
were
it.
Expensive.
I bet they are. I bet they were. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
And and I got my usage really low. An efficient refrigerator, things like that. And,
mm-hmm.
and as my friend Christopher Diamond, who used to work at the energy office in Salem, used to say, you got to eat your conservation vegetables before your solar cookies. You know?
Okay.
So the strategy was to get my usage as low as possible and then put a solar electric system on.
Interesting.
The back of the house.
Yeah. And where would you find, okay, maybe it's easy, but where I don't have an energy efficient refrigerator. I'm renting and it's just, not that thing. It's nothing like that there. But where do you find one? Are they pretty common these days?
Well, you can buy super efficient ones, but they're very expensive. But what I did, I went onto the floor of Sears, and I looked at those yellow energy tags.
Okay. The energy tags, okay.
Okay. They're yellow?
Yes.
And what they give you is consumption over a year, a rating, a kilowatt hours.
Okay, kilowatt.
Mm-hmm. And so I found the lowest one I could find.
Okay.
Now, what I found out was they do the testing in 90-degree ambient temperature.
Okay.
For these refrigerators.
Yes.
And I realized that my house was never, rarely at 90 degrees.
High, right.
So I bought this device called a kilowatt. You plug that into the wall, you plug the device into it, and it measures actual consumption.
Oh, really? Okay.
And this refrigerator measured out at 0.8 kilowatt hours a day.
That sounds low.
It is. Okay. Now, in the 70s, for example, they used between 3 and 5 kilowatt hours.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah,
so if you can find one that's 1 kilowatt hour a day or less, it's very efficient.
Okay. And then you measured it using this device that you bought to at a hardware store? Or?
I think I bought it from Real Goods Company in California.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And it measures consumption of any device.
Okay. So your appliances started with, you know, you got into that. And then what else around your home would you say is helping you be very energy efficient?
To save energy?
To save energy, yes.
I put a skylight tube in a windowless bathroom. For example, when I bought this house, the bathroom's in the center of the house and has no windows.
Okay,
It had five 60-watt light bulbs over the sink. So that's 600 watts anytime I wanted to use the bathroom.
Right, right.
So I put a skylight tube in there.
Sure.
And now I don't have to use lights at all during the day.
Okay.
And then I put four 2-watt LEDs in there. So anytime I turn the lights on, it's only 8 watts instead of 600.
Right, right.
So there's an example.
Okay, very good.
And of course, the LED lighting all over the house saves gobs of energy.
Yes. Well, do you know that, it was last year, some people knocked on my door and they were actually distributing light bulbs, like LED light bulbs and stuff. It was some, I can't remember the name of the group now, but they had a grant and they were just trying to get people used to this stuff and using it. And I know you are aware of the mechanics of this and how it's done. Do you follow the policy at all, or what's going on in terms of are there funding for this or ways to, are there incentives for people to do this? Or
well, here's the incentive I see. Like when I first started, LED light bulbs were like $70 a piece because it's a new technology.
Right. You said it was expensive.
So
figured
those four
it was,
bulbs
but
I put in my
I
house
had
were like
no
yeah,
idea.
Right. You can go into Home Depot now and buy an LED light bulb, and it's almost the same cost. Here's the deal: it has a higher initial cost than say an incandescent light bulb, but it uses so much less energy that you make up all that money in terms of energy savings.
Yes.
Because you're paying less for electricity.
Yes. It's the upfront payment, but it's...
And here's another thing. Like an incandescent light bulb, 90% of the energy that gets delivered to it is converted to heat energy.
Right.
It's more efficient as a heater than actual lumens.
Than light, yes.
An LED is the opposite. It gives very little heat. That's why it's so efficient. Almost all the energy that goes to it is converted to lumens.
Right,
I mean, I think the incentive is you save money over
You
time.
Save money, yeah. So we've got your insulation. We've got your the energy use, the appliances and whatnot. And so you get around with a car, electric vehicle.
You've been listening to Valley Views. I'm your host, Dale Holliday, and I'd love to hear from you. Comments, questions, ideas for future topics, or other matters you would like explored. Email me at valleyviews@kabu.org. That's ValleyViews at kabu.org. Special thanks to Chad Howard from Corvallis Access Media for his technical assistance and support. I look forward to being with you again next time. And remember, as Doctor Who once said, I'm not in charge, but I'm full of ideas. Bye!